I am Paul Harris, Ian Geist, Dan Strauss here in the studio with me. And in the 4 o'clock hour on Friday afternoons, Colin Jeffrey, our news director, switches to his showbiz alter ego, Showbiz Boy, and joins us to talk about movies and TV and other showbiz stuff. Hi, Colin. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, Paul?
Good. There are three big movies opening this weekend, which we'll get to in a second. But I haven't seen you since the Academy Awards on Sunday night. I was thrilled to see Spotlight win Best Picture. Even though you and I both predicted it would be The Revenant.
Yes, I was very happy to see that. And it seemed like it was going to go The Revenant's way when they won cinematography director and, you know, Leo was coronated.
Yeah.
Good thing he got his Oscar.
Yeah. Spotlight is back in theaters as of today.
Yes.
They have re-released it in 1,000 theaters across the country, including some here in the St. Louis area. Check your local listings. And if you haven't seen it, it is a spectacular movie. It was not my best movie of last year because Inside Out, the Pixar movie, was number one on my list, but just slightly behind it was Spotlight, which is a terrific movie about journalists doing their job and uncovering the pedophile priest scandals in Boston 14 years ago. And just remarkable writing, remarkable directing. It's one of those movies where you can't walk away and go, wow, the special effects are great. Not that kind of a movie. There are no special effects.
No.
But the storytelling and the acting, just phenomenal.
Very good, yes.
So that's back in theaters now if you didn't see Spotlight the first time around. And what's it competing with at the box office this weekend?
I guess the big two are Zootopia, London Has Fallen, and then Whiskey Tango Foxtrot.
That would be three.
Three, yes. But the big two really is who it's competing with. Whiskey Tango Foxtrot is also out. And I guess that's the drama, so maybe it's competing with that most directly.
Well, you saw Zootopia and I didn't, so why don't you start with that?
We'll start with Zootopia. That is Disney's tentpole animated movie of the year. They're going back to cute and cuddly animals. And we're going to ignore Song of the South because that's a horribly racist Disney movie. But we are going to, again, use a rabbit as our main character. So, Zootopia, it's a human world, but animals live in it. They've gone back to that idea of Robin Hood, where we're going to anthropomorphize all the animals, which works very nicely, especially when Disney handles it. Zootopia is the name of the big metropolis that all of the animals want to go to. And our story centers around a cute little bunny named Judy Hopps. And I use cute intentionally here. We'll come back to that later. But she lives on a farm, a carrot farm, and she wants to be a police officer and do good in the world. And the story begins as she is a young child, and everyone is telling her, you're a bunny, you're not supposed to be a cop, you're just a little bunny. And
in the Zootopia world, what animal is supposed to be a cop?
Other bigger, stronger animals. Okay. There are rhinos and hippopotami and tigers and leopards. And the predators and prey live side by side, and they don't eat one another. No one is attacking anyone.
That's a true story.
Yes, it's a true story.
Sorry, Dan. You didn't get in fast enough.
They all have opposable thumbs.
They do?
They do. It's a Disney movie. So, yes, they're able to pick things up. So it centers around, so we see her as a kid, she wants to be a police officer, and she tries to do good as a kid and bumps up again the little town bully who is a fox. And this is where we're introduced to the main conceit of this movie. It's a kid's movie, yes, but the point of the movie is to show kids that it's all right to be different and not to judge one another. It's an allegory for racism, which sounds really preachy. It's not. It borders a couple times, but it's not. It manages to be a kid's movie enough that you never feel like you're being preached at the whole time. But the point is, the prey aren't supposed to think that the predators, the foxes, are just these sly, weaselly guys who are always trying to get one over.
Well, no, the weasels are the weaselly guys.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, and there's a weasel in it. There are weasels in it.
Okay. Are they foxy? See what I did there?
Fast forward.
Remember when we started doing with this with Colin, and he came in and thought he was going to do serious movie
reviews? Oh, yeah, I know.
It'll be 2 years.
Doesn't work.
It will be 2 years in May.
Okay, so you're up to the foxy weasels.
Yes. So fast forward now. Judy has graduated first in her class under the Mammal Inclusion Act of the police, so they can bring in other animals to be police, and she's the first one. She's a bunny.
Okay.
And on one of her first days on the job, she meets Jason Bateman, who plays a fox, who is, she believes, trying to do something good, and it turns out running a scam. Being a fox, and all her prejudices are confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this devolves, the story moves away from the idea of her just trying to be a good cop to her trying to navigate sort of the racial politics of the city, and there's a nice little mystery at the core of this, and that is all of a sudden predators around Zootopia are going crazy and attacking. They're going feral or primal or whatever, and they're attacking prey.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not good. I mean, we can't have that because the entire society is based on the predators not eating the prey.
Mm-hmm.
So this is sort of what we find ourselves. They're trying to track this down.
It sounds like a much more serious movie than I would expect from Disney animation.
Yes, indeed. And that's perhaps my biggest issue with it. It seems from the trailers, it's like, oh, yeah, good kids movie. No, this is almost like tweenish.
See, the only trailer I've seen is the one that they also are using in some of the commercials, which is when, I guess, what's her name?
Judy Hopps.
She goes into the DMV, and the people working at the DMV are actual sloths.
Yes.
They work incredibly slowly.
Yes. I took my daughter to see this movie, and occasionally I'll ask, how are you doing? And she'll start imitating a sloth and just moving amazingly slowly.
Wow. You see, now that's a bad side effect of a movie like this.
Yes.
If kids all over America start deciding, I'm going to talk like this. Or in the morning, you got to get it. Come on, you got to get up and get to school. I'm getting ready. Oh, parents are going to be, your heads are going to be exploding.
Yes. And that gets to, if you've seen that preview, you've probably seen the funniest parts of the movie. There are jokes for parents in there. They're definitely adult for kids, but it's less adult than Who Framed Roger Rabbit, if that puts like a good... This is much more adult than Frozen, but not as adult as Who Framed Roger Rabbit. It's intense. Some of the chase scenes, some of the animals going a little crazy. My daughter's 4. Probably not my best job taking her to see this. I'm not going to lie. It may have been a bit too old for her.
It rated?
I want to say it's PG.
Yeah, it must be.
Yeah,
PG. But still, you don't think of a Disney movie.
Yeah, Disney animation, 4-year-old should be okay.
It's really like a noir movie. It feels like Chinatown, but for kids-ish. Hmm. It's odd to say that. But I want to kind of get back to the
main... She's a weasel. She's a fox. She's a weasel. She's a fox.
Were there Black Panthers in it?
I don't know. There might have been. There's a lot of animals in this movie. Mm-hmm. Like, and they introduce us to Zootopia on a train ride in. It's too quick. You kind of fly through all the different like biomes of the city. There's 12 parts. There's, you know.
I got to tell you, it sounds like you did not enjoy this movie.
I actually did. It was not at all what I expected. And I think we're going to get back to that with another movie where they market it as if like, oh, it's going to be an uproarious. It's not. It's more of a movie than that. There's still times when you're going to laugh. I wanted to get back. I used the word cute intentionally because that's probably one of the better scenes in the movie is someone sees her on her first day on the job and they're like, oh, look, it's a cute bunny. And she says, I can say cute. I can call other bunnies cute. You can't call me cute. You're
really?
Not a bunny.
Huh.
And it's this type of like social sort of commentary that they're dealing with on. I'm just going to say racism, but it's not because.
Now, do you think that's going to turn some people off?
Yes. Yes, it will. I think there are going to be some.
So word of mouth on this might be diminished.
Maybe, but I still think it's a good enough movie overall. I think people will enjoy it. It might make some people uncomfortable to be having their kids there and not realizing, again, that this is what it's built around. They didn't think this was going to happen. I mean, this is a charged issue right now.
Absolutely.
Especially. But you know, I guess I give Disney the benefit of the doubt. These movies take years and years. They had started any of this before anything happened in Ferguson or Baltimore. This is nothing to do with that.
Yeah, but they did change the title from the original, which was Bunny Lives Matter.
Yeah. Yep.
So it's actually it's directed by the two guys behind Wreck-It Ralph.
Cute hands up, don't hop.
Yeah, cute lives matter.
Ears up, don't hop.
Directed behind the guys behind Tangled and Wreck-It Ralph. It's definitely got something in there for adults, so mm-hmm. I think you'll enjoy it. It's got something in there for sort of the 8 to 10 crowd, I would say, and older. The kindergarten crowd, it might be a bit darker, intense at times. But all in all, still a fun, enjoyable movie.
What do you give it on a scale of 10?
A good message. I give it a 7. This grew on me. I saw it a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago now.
Mm-hmm.
So, I like it.
Okay. The second movie today is called Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, which is the Tina Fey movie. You mentioned there was a movie we were going to talk about today that's being marketed a little differently than it actually is, and this is it. While Zootopia seems like it's more grown up than most people would expect from Disney Animation, if you only judged the new Tina Fey movie based on the commercials, you would think it's a wacky comedy, and it's not. It's nothing like Sisters, the movie that she did a few months ago with Amy Poehler. And there's no Amy Poehler in this movie. You get Tina Fey as a woman, a real-life woman named Kim Barker, although in the movie her name is Kim Baker. I don't know why they changed it. But Kim Barker in real life was a woman who was writing copy in a newsroom in New York City, and we had just started the war in Iraq, and we were already in the war in Afghanistan, and the newsroom was spread so thin they needed more people to go overseas, and so they said to about a half dozen people in the newsroom, okay, you six or seven people, you don't have kids, you're not married, you don't have family here, so we need volunteers from among this group to go and be war correspondents in Afghanistan. And nobody was willing to do it right away, but she reluctantly volunteered and turned into a war correspondent and went over there, and instead of spending 3 months, she spent 3 years in Kabul, Afghanistan, and the outskirts of Afghanistan, covering war stories there. And so it got turned into a book called The Taliban Shuffle, which came out 5 years ago. And Tina Fey was told, you know what, this woman reminds me of you. And so she read the book, and she said, kind of does remind me of me. And so she has made the movie. She got Lorne Michaels to executive produce it, and her creative partner, Robert Carlock, to write the script. And now you get Tina Fey as Kim Baker, a war correspondent in Afghanistan. Margot Robbie is also in the movie. She plays a British war correspondent who has been there for quite a while before Tina Fey gets there. And Margot Robbie is the one who explains to her something that was originally in the Kim Baker book. It's the concept of 4-10-4. And the concept being, you know, at home in the United States, you might have been a 4, a 5, a 6, a 7. In Afghanistan, you're a 10. She says, you're a 9, bordering on a 10. And Tina Fey turns to her and goes, so what are you, a 15? And Margot Robbie says, yeah. There are funny moments in the movie. Mm-hmm. It's a drama with comic overtones, and there are some other scenes that are very, very well done. Martin Freeman, who, if you watch the first season of Fargo, you may have seen him in there. He was in
Sherlock.
Sherlock and lots of other good stuff in the last few years. He's in there as one of the other war correspondents. Alfred Molina plays a guy who becomes the Attorney General of Afghanistan. And I want to come back to that casting in just a moment. Billy Bob Thornton is in there as a U.S. Marine General. Josh Charles plays Tina Fey's boyfriend back home. It is not a war movie, and it is not an anti-war movie. There's no agenda about that either way. It's about the adventures that this woman has as a war correspondent. First, you get the fish out of water part, which is, you know, you take somebody who's never been to Afghanistan, and there's a huge learning curve there to figure out what you can do and where you can go and when do you have to wear something on your head and what can you say to people and who can you talk to and how do you interview a man who refuses to talk to a woman when you're a woman? There's all sorts of interesting things like that, but again, it's not a pro-war or anti-war movie in any way. It doesn't have any agenda other than that. And in that way, it's kind of similar to that horrible Bill Murray movie last year, which we both put on our 10 worst list, called Rock the Casbah, which had Bill Murray and Kate Hudson and a bunch of other people. That one was terrible. And here's the way I describe it. If you take the plot of a movie and make it into a line, and every once in a while that line comes to an intersection where they have to go left or right. There's a fork in the middle of the line, and they have to go left or right. Whichever way the Bill Murray movie went, this movie goes the other way, and it turns out to be the right way.
That's good.
It's very, very entertaining in that way. It was directed by the guys who made Focus, which also had Margot Robbie in it, and they also made Crazy Stupid Love with Emma Stone and
Ryan Gosling
and Steve Carell. It is, as I said, not a comedy, but has some funny moments, and I liked it a lot. I'm a Tina Fey fan. I did not like Sisters all that much because it was just over-the-top stupidity. I could take some stupidity in a movie. Sometimes I go to a movie specifically to see stupidity, but that one was over-the-top in its stupidity. This one is pretty darn good and pretty darn entertaining, and I walked out of there with a smile on my face, and so I'm giving it an 8 out of 10.
Wow.
Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, it's called. But I want to go back to this question about Alfred Molina playing an Afghan attorney general. After all of this stuff that we have just gone through with the Oscars and what they call Hollywood whitewashing.
Yes.
You know, I mentioned Emma Stone. She was in a movie last year called Aloha, where she was playing a Hawaiian woman of Asian descent. You can't get a less Asian than Emma Stone. Alfred Molina is a British actor. He's played all sorts of roles in his career. He's played, he was the lead in Fiddler on the Roof. He's not Jewish.
He's in Da Vinci Code, Dr. Octopus, and Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Raiders of the Lost Ark. He's been in everything.
Okay, he's been in a lot of things. But with the current atmosphere in Hollywood, particularly for racially sensitive casting, let's call it, should they have had a white actor playing the guy who's the Attorney General of Afghanistan rather than hiring, I don't know, somebody with brown skin?
No, they shouldn't have. That's a mistake on their part.
Why?
Because why would you take that level of authenticity out of a movie where it's based on something authentic? It's her memoirs. Like, why change that? Why just arbitrarily say, oh, Alfred Molina would be great for this role as opposed to, I mean, literally anyone from that region? I don't understand the whole idea behind it. Like, we had Gods of Egypt, I think, last week. It's a movie that's supposed to be in Egypt, and they had white actors as the leads. It's like, can we please just start making things look right, at least? There's something to be said for then authenticity behind it, too. They may have an understanding of where this character's coming from, because you may have find an Afghani actor who lived in Afghanistan and might have that perspective to add to the role.
You might find an Arab actor who's never been to Afghanistan but could certainly play the role.
Yes. Yes.
And I would also add, I don't think Alfred Molina sells any tickets.
No.
It's not like, well, we're putting him in there. You know, I was thinking about going to that Tina Fey movie, and I wasn't really sure. And then I heard Alfred Molina was in it, and I bought that ticket immediately.
Yeah. It's not like they put George Clooney or something in it. And, yeah, I don't understand it. I
will tell you that he does a fine job in the role, and it doesn't detract from the quality of the movie, but it was a question I had walking out. I still recommend it. 8 out of 10 for Whiskey Tango Foxtrot.
Prince of Persia, which I believe he was also in. Jake Gyllenhaal was the Prince of Persia. Ben Kingsley was like the, his, I don't, he
well,
was
wait
in
a second,
it as well.
Wait a second, Ben Kingsley played Gandhi.
I know.
Gandhi's the guy who revolted against the British. Ben Kingsley's British.
Exactly. It's, I don't get it.
So would you go back and recast the movie Gandhi and not have Ben Kingsley play the role?
No, because, no. I wouldn't recast something from then. I would say right now when it's easier than ever, I would say, to get international actors in an American-made movie, I would say, let's try and do that just for some level of authenticity in the movie.
Okay.
But it's not going to keep me from seeing, like, that's the problem. It's not going to keep me from seeing this movie.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go on to our third movie this week. Talk about authenticity. This movie has very little of it. It's called London Has Fallen. It is a sequel to Olympus Has Fallen, which I just happened to watch at home a couple of weeks ago. The first movie was with Gerard Butler as the greatest Secret Service agent in the history of the Secret Service.
Yes.
Protecting the White House when the White House, he's protecting the president when the White House is attacked by either South Korean or North Korean terrorists.
Yes.
Who managed to get past all the security at the White House, the most protected building in the world.
Yes.
And not only get in there, but managed to get into the bunker 150 feet below the White House and and they hold the president hostage, etc. And essentially, the first movie was Die Hard at the White House with Gerard Butler playing John McClane.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, yes, that's exactly what it is.
Because everybody else is dead, and it's a one-man show from there on out.
It's like if there was a professional sports team that was absolutely crushing the other team, and they had a scouting report on everyone except the greatest player on the other team.
Yeah.
And he just proceeded to win the... It's like, how did no one know about Gerard Butler? How did they not be... Oh, he's the best one. Let's kill him first. Everyone else will fold. No, they just kind of let him go. But it was a fun movie. The first one was fun.
You know what? I wouldn't have gone to see the sequel if I had thought the first one absolutely sucked. Because in both cases, and we'll get into what the new one's about in just a second. In both cases, I think movies like this, they certainly have a place in our movie sphere, if you will. And that, and their place is this. They make a promise of what kind of movie they're going to be. You know what you're going to get when you walk in that door. And they deliver on it very professionally.
Yes, they do.
And the new movie is called London Has Fallen.
Yes.
In which the same president, played by the same actor,
Aaron Eckhart.
And let's just stop for just a second and find out what happened to his career.
I don't know. Wow.
That's a guy who I respected a lot, who was making some really good movies, and then all of a sudden...
did this.
I don't know.
He started doing Gerard Butler movies. That's what happened to his career.
What was he in before that we would know?
Thank You for Smoking was probably his... I mean, I thought that was the role that was going to make him more serious. Yeah. I really enjoyed Thank You for Smoking.
Yeah, I interviewed him when they made a movie here in St. Louis that I don't know if it was even projected onto a screen. It was so bad about 10 years ago. I can't even remember the name of it. That's how bad it was. Mm-hmm. And you've seen him in other things, and he's a good actor. But I guess after a while, lots of these Hollywood actors say, well, if I can get into a big action movie, that's going to A, pay me, and B, more people will see me, and maybe that gets me more roles. And in this case, at least he's gotten himself a sequel. So he's still the president, and Gerard Butler is still his top secret service protection guy.
Yeah.
And they get news at the beginning of the movie that the Prime Minister of England has died
suddenly after surgery under no suspicious circumstances.
And so all of the world leaders are going to London for his funeral, including the President of the United States. And that sets in motion a plot that involves terrorists attacking where the funeral is going to take place and blowing stuff up and killing lots and lots of people, all once again to get to the President of the United States, their ultimate plan being to kill him live on TV. Now, it sounds like I just spoiled the whole movie for you. That part of it doesn't matter.
The plot's unimportant.
It doesn't matter. Do you know the plot of Die Hard 2 or 3 or 4? Does it matter?
No.
No, it's can Bruce Willis save the day? Well, in this case, it's can Gerard Butler, as Bruce Willis's character, John McClane, can he save the day and can he save the president? There's your movie, right?
Yeah.
Now, that all laid out, I said it makes a promise and it lives up to that promise.
Yeah.
Do you agree?
Absolutely. This was fun and... nothing like this is a movie you will watch and walk out of the theater and be like, that was fun, and not remember. I'm glad you refreshed me on the plot. I had forgotten chunks of it.
Well, there are parts of it that also go involved other things that are all irrelevant to whether you're going to enjoy the movie or not.
Yes.
You don't have to think in this movie at all. You just sit back and you watch and just let it wash over you as, you know, people get killed, maimed, blown up. Situations develop, and it's the president on the run with one guy protecting him in the middle of London.
It is bloody, and if you think the language has been poor on the presidential trail this year, whoa, not even a little compared to this.
Right.
This probably would have had an R for language in the first, I don't know, 45 seconds. 45 seconds to a minute of the movie, but it's exactly what you expect. There's witty... air quotes. There's witty one-liners.
Yep.
There's the fun buddy dynamic.
Now, he's putting that in air quotes because they're the kind of one-liners that you used to get in Arnold Schwarzenegger movies that you know were written specifically to be that one-liner that people might quote later on.
Yes.
Here's the problem. I can't remember any of them.
No, a lot of them involve the F word. I remember that. A lot of them. That
and there's also a lot of this. And I won't say what characters are involved in this, but there's a lot of this where a main character is about to be killed by a bad guy until one of the other main characters kills the bad guy, and the guy and the first good guy says to the second good guy, "What took you so long?"
Oh. Yep. Oh,
oh,
this is a cliche-driven, just fun romp. all of this sort of said about it being a throwaway movie, there's one thing that stuck with me. There's a firefight where Gerard Butler and other people are having to advance towards a building. The British SAS squad, you know, this elite squad. They're having to advance towards a building. This is so well shot.
Yes.
It's like over his shoulder, you see the tracers, which are the bullets that light up on screen.
Because it's at night.
It's at night. And it like follows him through this, like going back side to side, blowing things up, shooting guys, snapping guys' necks. And you're right over his shoulder the entire time. It's very fun. It's well shot. And it stuck with me because I'm looking at this and I'm like, I've never heard of this director before. Babak Najafi.
I had no idea who that was.
Exactly.
Their first movie, Olympus Has Fallen, was directed by Antoine Fuqua, who made Training Day,
yes.
which won Denzel Washington. I can say Antoine. won Denzel Washington an Academy Award. And he did a good job, and he kind of set the pace. And this guy essentially picks it up and takes it into the second movie. That scene you're talking about, definitely inspired by video games.
Yes,
it's that first-person shooter where you're moving through the bad guys, and you can see the flashes of the guns ahead of you as bullets are flying your way, and then you duck behind a wall. And there's a lot of that sort of perspective, I think.
Yeah, but it was fun, and I thought of this the other night. They definitely set it up where it's like, make a trilogy. I figured out what they need him to do. Instead of just being chronological and he has to save Aaron Eckhart again, make him go back in time and be the Secret Service agent who protects Abraham Lincoln and then has to take on the entire South. Why not? It would be the perfect direction for this to go and just be ridiculous.
No, I think that they're probably going to move it into other cities. After all, the Aaron Eckhart presidential character has just been reelected, so he's got a couple more movies in him. So if I were the mayor of Paris, I would be very worried about the Eiffel Tower.
Yes. They actually say that. What's his name? Chris O'Donnell from MSNBC. He's an anchor for MSNBC. Actually says at one point, he's doing a newscast for everything, many of London's major landmarks have already been destroyed.
Yeah.
The thing we always joke about.
Right.
Stay away from Big Ben. Well,
yep.
Stay away from Big Ben.
There it goes. So what do you give it on a scale of 10?
I give it a 6 because it's not a good movie, but it is fun for what it is.
Yeah.
How big are the president's hands?
Big enough to handle hardware. Let's just leave it at that.
Go. Okay.
And I'm not using a euphemism there. I give it a 6 out of 10 also. I think this is a movie that, again, you should know what to expect when you're walking in, and therefore you cannot be disappointed.
Yeah.
However, there are going to be many other reviewers who are going to write about this movie in derogatory terms because they were expecting something grander. And that's their fault.
Yeah.
Because that you should not expect anything more than what this promise is that they then deliver on in London Has Fallen.
And there's always a however in life.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes.
Say however.
Yeah. Let's take a break. Then we'll come back with a little bit more showbiz stuff here. First, we've got to go to the roads and take care of some business. And we'll continue along here on the Big 550 KTRS. It's the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. Paul Harris, Ian Geist, Dan Strauss, and Colin Jeffrey here talking about showbiz as we do in the 4 o'clock hour every week. One of my all-time favorite TV shows is going to air its final episodes tomorrow night after 14 seasons on the air and hundreds of experiments and explosions and all sorts of other problems along the way. Adam Savage and Jamie Hyneman are finally closing up shop on Mythbusters with a one-hour finale show that I have a feeling is going to involve them blowing up a cement truck again, one of the greatest pieces of video they ever did. And then after that, they're going to air a one-hour reunion show in which former Mythbusters Grant Imahara and Carrie Byron and Tori Belleci are going to come back and probably talk about some of their favorites. And they also have a couple of special appearances by some special guests.
I am a big fan of the Mythbusters. I've even had them over to the White House a few times. Now, come to think of it, they never let me blow anything up, but I'm still going to miss them. I'm grateful for the time they proved that, yes, America did actually land on the moon. And for the time they came to the White House to debunk the Archimedes solar ray. That was fun. So after more than 1,000 myths tested, after more than 900 explosions, after 83 miles of duct tape, I just want to say thank you to Adam, Jamie, Carrie, Tori, Grant, and all of the MythBusters team for entertaining us these 14 years. More importantly, thank you for inspiring so many of our young people to ask the big questions about our world and to seek the answers through math, science, and engineering. It's going to make a real difference to America's future, I promise.
And I think that's one of the things that the show will leave in its wake, not just the explosions, but also the fact that some people were inspired. You know, it's funny because at the beginning of every episode, they say, look, we're professionals. Don't try this stuff at home.
Mm-hmm.
But the irony of it is a lot of people did try stuff at home and do their own scientific experiments or come up with things that were interesting questions to challenge Adam and Jamie over the years. And I think that'll be part of the lasting legacy of that show.
Yeah.
It's such a shame that it never, like, it always seemed to deserve a better home than Discovery, if that makes sense. I was happy that they put them on, but it seems like something that should have been seen by many more people. And it's a shame that it was never picked up. Like, it had such runaway success. What is CBS showing on a Sunday evening that they couldn't say, oh.
Well, maybe not a Sunday evening. That's the most popular
yes.
night of television.
Okay, so
Saturday evening
that they couldn't say, okay, we're going to put this on here.
Yeah, I don't know what the numbers were like. But I do know that I've seen every episode, and I'm going to miss the show because there was a cleverness to it. And also, the thing that was key to that show was, we have to figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
How do we test this silly myth or this hypothesis or something that somebody posted on Reddit? They did a Reddit special last week, Ian.
Yeah.
And I know you're a big Reddit fan and you
yes.
read it every day. So they went on Reddit and they took some of the things that were on there, including one of them, which was, can you blow up the Reddit logo? fill it with paint and glitter and blow it up and see what that looks like with the super slow motion camera. They had a camera that shot 28,000 frames per second.
That's ridiculous.
That's 1,000 times faster than regular television cameras. And so they had some of their explosions where you could literally see the shock wave.
Yes.
It was beautiful, beautiful television and well-produced. And
I missed Grant, Tori, and Carrie for years when Discovery refused to pay them.
Yeah.
Is that what
away.
That was, a money issue? They were wanting more money?
I think so, and I think that's why the show is coming to an end, although Discovery and their sister channel, the Science Channel, are going to continue to run MythBusters episodes in reruns for years and years and years.
And to pull back the curtain a bit, those two don't get along
Jamie and Adam.
Well off the air,
yeah,
which I don't think is a huge secret, but yeah, they yeah. don't. So I think there's probably some tension there because
they're not best friends. But.
No, and those shows require a lot of work, yeah. like a lot of work. What takes an hour to show us is weeks or months in some cases of prep work, and then.
Well, I read an interview with Adam Savage this week who said, "Yeah, we started doing these experiments 14 years ago, and we've never taken a day off since then." Now I know that's not true.
Yeah.
Because I know he was at the amazing meeting with me a few times in Las Vegas, but what he means is week in and week out, at least 50 weeks of the year, they were producing a show that really only put on about 18 or 20 episodes a season.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of hard work, and you're right that Adam and Jamie were not close. Jamie actually owns the company M5 Industries,
yes,
where this whole thing was shot. So he's been terribly enriched by this, as have Adam and some of the others.
Yeah.
But really clever, and I'm really going to miss that. Mm-hmm. Any other showbiz stuff you wanted to get to?
No, I'm just going to say that 11-22-63, if you're still following along with it, I started this week's episode, and time constraints, I didn't drop it because it was no good, but it's starting to get to the more interesting parts of the book now, I think. So I'm still watching it. I'm still liking it enough.
This is streaming on Amazon?
Yeah. And then, you know, Netflix. They've got a big month ahead. It starts right now with House of Cards back. So
when is that back?
Now, today. It came back.
Really?
Yes.
Why am I sitting here?
I don't know. I was kind of shocked when it didn't say, someone's in for Paul Harris today. He's in Netflix coma.
Well, oh, man, I have plans this weekend, too. I guess next week I'll have...
Yeah.
Feeling okay, Paul?
Yeah. I'm feeling fine. This will be the fourth season.
This will be the fourth season
of House of Cards.
Yeah, okay. One more after this, I think.
Okay, and I also want to thank you for turning me on to an FX show that I missed when it ran on TV called Justified.
Did you start watching it?
I am about 9 episodes into the first season.
Oh my gosh!
And for those of you who've never seen Justified, Timothy Oliphant, plays a U.S. Marshal who he has a tendency to kill people.
Yes.
But only when they've shot first, which is why the show is called Justified. Mm-hmm. And just to give you an idea of what it's like, it starts off with him on a rooftop in Miami sitting down with a guy who is obviously a bad guy from some drug cartel. And he sits down and he says, remember yesterday when I told you you had 24 hours to get out of town or I was going to kill you? Yeah. You have 8 minutes.
Uh-huh. Oh, man. Yeah. It's fun.
Yeah. And then it goes to Kentucky, where his character is originally from, and he gets involved with people he knew there, and an ex-girlfriend, and I don't know who the guy is who plays his boss, the chief of that division, that office of the U.S. Marshals.
His name. But Walter Goggins is the main, he plays the bad guy, his main sort of foe.
Yeah. It is really, really a lot of fun.
Yes.
It is, you know, if you're used to shows like House of Cards or Breaking Bad or Mad Men, shows that played out over the course of seasons with story arcs that went for a long way, and you would come to the end of the hour and only a tiny little thing was resolved instead of the big story. That's not what this is.
Nope.
This is, I guess you could call it a procedural.
Yeah, it's a Western procedural. Like, it's got that Western feel. He's a gunslinger.
Although it's modern day. Don't get the idea that it takes place in the 1850s or something.
No.
It's modern day. And he has to deal with one thing in each episode, and he deals with it. There are story pieces that continue along mm-hmm. as the months go by or as the seasons go by. But each hour is self-contained. So you could watch one episode of this out of order and still pretty much know what's going on. Yeah. So it's called Justified.
Well, good. I'm glad you like it.
It's streaming on Amazon uh-huh. right now, and you may want to check that out. All right. He's got to go because yep. we're going to do news here at the top of the hour. When we come back in the 5 o'clock hour, we'll have the Harris Challenge, and then Mike Evans will be here, who I'm sure will have a lot to say about this development. And this is so weird to say, 1994 to 2016, that's 22 years.
Yes.
22 years later, there's a development in the O.J. Simpson case. That's where Mike was buttering his bread in 1994 and how he first came to the attention of Frank and a lot of other broadcasters around the country. So he'll probably have a lot to say about that. And I have a brand new batch of knuckleheads in the news, all coming up here on the Big 550 KTRS.